Hello, Cheryl and everyone. It's good to be here with you all for the Guiding Light. I missed the last couple of weeks because of other things going on, so it's good to be back. It looks like I'll be here 1, 2, probably 3 weeks in a row, and then I'll miss another 2 because I'll be traveling. So, so it's good to be here today. last time we were here, we looked at the first part of NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And if you were here, then you might remember it, even though it was a while ago, because we went into Revelation as well. And we looked at how we worship judgment. So that's what we looked at last time, that we really think we need judgment. We need guilt in order to keep ourselves safe. And that if we don't judge, if we don't find guilty, don't find someone guilty, that there will be chaos and we won't be safe. That's the upside down belief system that's represented by the 666 in the book of Revelation. And what we noticed about the 666 is that something upside down can just be turned over. The 666 can become 999, 9 actually being considered a divine number. 999. And in order to turn that 666 over, we need to realize that judgment is actually the cause of evil. And that if we are willing to let go of our judgment and be at peace within ourselves, then it's peace that we share, and that's actually the salvation of the world and, of course, ourselves. So that's what we looked at last time. And today, we're going to begin at the top of page 299 in NTI, right at the top with verses 18 to 22, and we'll continue with chapter 10. What I'm going to do first is play a song, and I don't even know what this song is. I probably will start to recognize it once I hear it. But it's a song that's in my playlist that just looking at it, I can't even tell you what it is. So I thought, I'm curious about that one. We'll play that one and see what it is. So it has a nice title. It's called God Loves Me. And it's by an artist named Lena, which is a pretty nice name also. I like the name Lena. So here we go.
Now you don't even know that.
a great song. You know, I don't remember ever hearing that song before. I have no idea how it got into my iTunes playlist. Because usually, you know, I hear a song, I like it, and I add it to my playlist. And this one, I'm not sure how it got in there. But wow, I like it. And I'm also glad that it jumped out at me today, because I think it's a great reminder of that guiding light. Of that guiding light from 3 weeks ago, about letting go of judgment. You know, I just love that song. I'm so glad it's there, however it got there. I'm certain someday I'll be playing it again. That was really super. So, thank you, Mystery, for giving me that song. All right. So, beginning at the top of page 299. You cannot serve two masters means that you cannot believe illusory thoughts are true and know true thoughts as true also. True thoughts are always true and illusory thoughts are not true. But illusory thoughts may be chosen as experience over thoughts that are true. So let me start by speaking a little bit about real thoughts or true thoughts, as it says here. And of course, in Miracles, it calls them real thoughts. And here in NTI, it uses the term true thoughts. And of course, you guys know that I did not write NTI for my own enlightenment. I wrote NTI as the ignorant student. And I guess in a way I wrote it for my own enlightenment, right? It came from within me, so it was my own enlightenment coming out to teach me. But when I was the scribe of NTI, my experience was my ignorance, right? I was asleep, not awake. Lots of grievances, lots of fear, lots of guilt, lots of unworthiness, lots of judgments, right? And so when NTI back then spoke about my true thoughts, I didn't know what they were. And I suppose that I imagined, in fact, I know that I imagined, that my true thoughts would sound very much like my illusory thoughts, but different. I mean, the same but different. So, for example, an illusory thought is, I'm a piece of crap. You're a piece of crap. I'm better than you. You're better than me. Right? These kinds of thoughts are illusory thoughts. So I thought that true thoughts might literally be, you know, thoughts that I could hear in my mind like, oh, you know, you're lovely and I'm lovely. Everything is lovely. But the same chatter sound, the same quality. Thoughts that we think. And what I've learned now that I actually experience our true thoughts, what I've learned is that our true thoughts don't have a voice. Our true thoughts are more like a feeling or an attitude. You know, so certainly there's the feeling or the attitude, I'm lovely, you're lovely. But there's not the thought. There's not a little voice in my head. You know, the voice in my head would say, I'm full of crap, you're full of crap. And it would go on and on and on about why I'm full of crap or why you're full of crap, right? There'd be a whole story around it. But it doesn't have that quality. The true thoughts don't have that quality of, oh, I'm lovely and you're lovely and here's why we're lovely and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't have that quality of ego. It's just a general feeling, a general outlook, a general way of seeing. Because our true thoughts do not have a voice, they're very easily covered up by a noisy mind. It's not that they aren't present. It's just that when we place our attention with whatever the busy mind is saying, we don't notice the true thoughts.
The true thoughts are always, 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 always here. Always here. And if they weren't always here, they wouldn't be true. Anything that comes and goes is not true. Anything that has a beginning and an end is not true. Anything that changes is not true. So our true thoughts are always, always, always here. But we can be distracted away from them, and we can be distracted away from them, you know, quite a bit. So again, the paragraph says, you cannot serve two masters, which means I cannot be focused on whatever my mind is saying. I cannot be focused on the chattering of my mind and notice my true thoughts too, because the true thoughts are subtle enough when compared to a noisy mind. They're subtle enough that they're not noticed if I'm focused on the mind. So I can't have it both ways. I can't think whatever I think about you or think whatever I think about me and feel the reality of my true thoughts about us at the same time. You cannot serve two masters means you cannot believe illusory thoughts are true and know the true thoughts and know true thoughts as true also. I should probably pick up the book. The book is a ways from me, so I was having trouble reading it. It was like way over there on my desk for some reason. I'm sitting here all relaxed trying to read from the corner of my desk. Like, my eyes just aren't that good. So let me bring the book a little closer. I'm all relaxed today. I didn't even feel like picking up the book. All right, let's try this again. You cannot serve two masters means that you cannot believe illusory thoughts are true and know true thoughts as true also. True thoughts are always true. See, that's what I said. They're always present. You know, our perfect unconditional love, our perfect unconditional happiness, our perfect unconditional openness, our perfect always alive awareness is always here. They don't come and go. True thoughts are always true. And illusory thoughts are not true. Always, you know, they're not true. But, and here's an interesting but, illusory thoughts may be chosen as experience over thoughts that are true. So in that lovely song that we just listened to, one of the characters that Lena asked us not to judge was the prostitute, the streetwalker, right? She said it's all she knows, right? And she asked us not to judge her. She said, you know, you could be her or I could be her, right? But let's ignore Lena for a minute. Let's judge that prostitute. Lots of people like to do that. Let's just join in. Let's join in and judge that prostitute. So what kind of judgments can we come up with? She's stupid. Right? She's less than me. She's lazy. She could have got a job. I don't know. What else can we come up with? I'm not as good at judging as I used to be. You know. She's diseased. You know, she's a drug addict and in my better than mind, I see that as meaning she's the scum of the earth. Translation, she's the scum of the earth. Right? As I judge my friend, the prostitute, not realizing, of course, that she's my friend, as I judge my friend, the prostitute, I feel in some way in my body every single solitary judgment that I pass on her. And this is what most people don't see. When I am, you know, with you, we're at dinner, we just, you know, somehow we ended up in this neighborhood where there's prostitutes. We took a wrong turn or something. Finally, we made it back to our little haven, and we're in a Starbucks. And we're getting our coffee, and we're sitting down with our lattes and our macchiatos. And now talking about the prostitutes that we saw when we were lost and drove down that wrong road, right? And we're talking about how awful they were in whatever way we're doing it, right? How do we feel? Think about it. Imagine this for a moment. Some of you might be able to imagine it more easily than others. How do you feel while you're sitting there in the coffee shop with me, bad-mouthing, judging these prostitutes that we just saw? Can you describe that feeling as perfect peace and joy and love and openness? You can't, can you? Because you see, if we choose untrue thoughts, and we can, we have the freedom to choose untrue thoughts. If we choose untrue thoughts, then we experience them over our real thoughts. Now, our real thoughts would be peace. And we can remember, our real thoughts are more like feelings or attitudes or outlooks. So our real thoughts would be peace and joy and love and openness. That's our nature. But when we're talking about these prostitutes that we just saw, judging these prostitutes that we just saw, we aren't experiencing our real nature. We're experiencing our illusory thoughts. We're experiencing the emotional content of that judgment. And this is kind of important to see. You know, Lena said in her song, Lena said, you know, you can't judge me. You don't see like I see, you know. And that's a fine argument because she's right. We don't see as she sees. We haven't walked in her shoes. But Jesus would actually give you another reason for not judging, a different reason. Because if you're really addicted to judging Lena and her prostitute friends, you don't care about their point of view, right? You don't care. So the fact she says, you don't see like I see, it just sounds like a defense. So Jesus has another argument. Jesus says in the Bible that with the measure you judge, right, it will be measured back to you. In other words, Jesus is saying what I'm saying right now. You will feel, actively feel the experience of your own judgment. And what your own judgment is doing is hurting you. Your judgment is covering up your real thoughts, your true nature. That's the reason to let go of judgment, no matter what it is. And you know, one of the questions that people often ask, I haven't had it asked of me lately, but for some reason I've been catching a lot of Byron Katie in the last few days on Awakening Together Radio. There's been a lot of Byron Katie there. And boy, I've heard her ask the question a lot. You know, how can I let go of judging these horrible things in the world? That's always people's question, right? And people will have different horrible things, you know. Children that are raped or sex slaves, that's a good one. There was a sex slave question the other day. I think that was actually a question sent to me. I think I answered that privately, but I think somebody, yes, that was sent to me. That wasn't Byron Katie. Somebody knew through a television show or something about a girl who was sold by her parents into sex slavery as an infant and raised up to be a sex slave. You know, and how can I forgive that? Right? That was a question to me. Well, the way that you forgive that is realize that if you judge that, you're going to be lost to your own true nature. You have to ask yourself, what do I want more? Do I want to know myself or not know myself? Because these are my choices. And if you want to take the attitude that Buddha had, you know, when Buddha started his spiritual path, it really was because he wanted to save the world, right? He saw old age and sickness and death, and it broke his heart. Even though he was young and strong and wealthy, it broke his heart. So he wanted to save the world. And what he discovered is he can't invest in these attacking energies. Judgment is an attack. He can't invest in these attacking energies and save the world too, because it's these attacking energies that actually create the sickness and the death and the old age. So whether you're thinking about, whether you're using the thought process of, I cannot judge and know my true nature, or using the thought process of, I cannot save the world and judge, or both, put them together, use both. That's why you let go of judgment. And if you don't find one of these reasons, it's almost impossible to let go of judging some of the appearances. If you don't find one of these reasons that actually point to truth, it's almost impossible to let go of judgment, because some of these things do appear to be justified. Remember, that's what we talked about 3 weeks ago. I mean, if I don't judge, you know, prostitutes and young babies sold into sex slavery and pimps and drug dealers and murderers, you know, I won't be safe, right? That's the upside down thought system that we learned about last time. I have to judge them and find them guilty in order for me to be safe. That's the thought process. But that's totally ignoring the fact that it's my judgment that is creating these types of energies, which lead to these types of appearances. There was a woman who used to live with me for about 9 months. She wasn't a prostitute, but in a way, her life story was very similar to the life story of many prostitutes. She was a thief. She was a thief, not a prostitute. She found a different way to survive. But her story was very similar. This particular friend of mine, as a young person, had severe ADD, and this is back before it used to be diagnosed really and treated and, you know, and accepted in the school system, or at least to the degree that it is now. So she had severe ADD, and she was in, you know, the special class, whatever they call it, special education, because of her severe ADD, and not doing well there. And her parents, now her parents, by the way, her parents actually met in an insane asylum, and they were both patients. So her parents, you know, weren't the healthiest of beings anyway, right? But her parents, more specifically, I think her father, when she was age 13 and just not at all being successful in school, he just decided school was a waste of time for her. And he took her out of school. And I'm missing a link in the story because I don't remember the next part. But for some reason, he also kicked her out of the house at age 13. At age 13. What's a 13-year-old girl going to do? Well, some of them are going to become prostitutes. There's an answer. Right? Especially if they meet a nice pimp who starts it off in a real soft way. I'm going to take care of you, right? There's an answer. That's one possibility. In her case, she became a thief. She says that the only thought that came to her, listen to these words, the only thought that came to her was steal. Now, many of you have recently studied the code with me. Maybe before that, NTI Ephesians. Or maybe you know about Buddha's interdependent co-arising. Where does that thought steal? Where does that thought come from? It comes from all of us and the energies that we are putting together through the thoughts we're believing. It's what we call the script. And that was her line. And at that point, she wasn't high enough in vibration to be aware of another possibility. She says the only thought was steal. And she started off by stealing. She lived in San Diego, and actually her parents were fairly well off. So when she was tossed out in a very nice neighborhood. It's called La Jolla. And there are very expensive plants in people's yards. Very expensive plants. you know, shipped from overseas and that kind of thing. So she found a nursery that agreed to buy the plants if she would steal them. And she started off by just stealing plants out of people's yards, and this is how she made money. And then she got brave enough to start going into the garages that were left open or whatever and left unlocked. And then she says she started going in the garage door into the house, but no more than 9 feet. You know, whatever she could find within 9 feet, she would take and go. She eventually ended up being a very skilled thief. In fact, she robbed houses for tens of thousands of dollars worth of merchandise, you know, each house in La Jolla for years. And the police couldn't catch her. And I think one reason they couldn't catch her is because she didn't look like a thief. She said she would dress up like a realtor or something and, you know, look like she belonged there. She knew how to look like she belonged there, right? And then she knew she would watch the houses and she knew which houses people were leaving and leaving it unlocked. And she'd just walk in and take things. She said sometimes they had extra cars in the garage and they had their keys hanging right there on a notch right near the garage door. She'd walk in, load up their extra car with their stuff and drive away. Now, by the time she moved in with me, she was trying to let go of her old ways of being, which included also being a drug addict and a thief. And one of the biggest challenges that we had was her guilt. Her guilt actually kept her stuck in her behaviors. You know, she'd feel guilty, so she'd drink. And she'd found a psychiatrist who was in his 90s and without hardly any attention at all would give her prescription drugs that were actually addictive and that she could get high on. So she would drink and she would take these drugs and sometimes she'd sneak out and steal. She wasn't robbing houses when she lived with me. She was shoplifting, which by comparison was much smaller, much more petty. But she had an addiction to stealing and she couldn't stop. And the reason she couldn't stop was the self-image of the guilt. So I couldn't judge her. I couldn't add to that. When she would go out of my house and steal and come back with, you know, something that she'd stolen from a store, I couldn't judge her. I could talk to her about how she felt. I could help her discover for herself that there was like this temporary high that she got when she was stealing and getting away with it. Like it's like being an addict on anything else, right? If you're an addict on heroin, why do you shoot up? Because you get a high. You know, it relieves the withdrawal that you were experiencing before. But then, at some point, the withdrawal returns, right? Well, it's the same thing with stealing. When she would go to the store and she would steal, she would get high. But I would help her to look, by helping her look at herself, notice that the high was always temporary, that she always crashed, that the guilt always returned, and next thing we knew, she was looking for another high. I could help her look at herself, but I could not judge her. Because if I judged her, I'm a part of the problem. I'm a part of what's keeping her stuck. In fact, my job was to show her no matter what she did, she was innocent. And I remember, now I actually didn't require any rent of her, but, you know, she was guilty. So she'd give me like $200 a month, which, you know, is just a small amount. I mean, you know, I bought the groceries and everything. It was kind of a token amount, but I didn't even want that. But she'd give me about $200 a month, and I would take it. And I kept it in a drawer in my room. I don't know why, but I never took it to the bank. She'd hand me $200, and I'd throw it in a drawer. And one day she said to me, she's terrified, terrified. I'm going to steal from you. You know, I'm so scared. I'm going to steal from you. I don't know if I can keep myself from it. I'm like, go ahead. You know, it's just your money. Go ahead. I don't care. I couldn't show any concern for whether she even stole from me. Go ahead. I don't care. Take anything. Doesn't matter to me if you steal from me. To my knowledge, she never did. I needed to help her see that she was innocent. I needed to help her see that when, and I never blamed her dad either. In fact, I love her dad. Her dad and I got to know each other, and I never, ever judged her dad. But I needed to help her see that when these circumstances occurred, when her father kicked her out and she was 13 years old, and the only thought that occurred to her was steal, that was just the script. That was just a happening, and she didn't know any better but to believe that thought at that time. That she was perfectly innocent. Or if there is guilt, then we all equally share the guilt. Because we all took part in creating that thought, steal. Or that thought, sell your body. Or that thought, kill him. Right? But there's no way one person can be more guilty than another. We're all in this together. It's a shared responsibility. And I prefer the word responsibility to guilt. I do think it's a responsibility. It's a shared responsibility. We're waking up. We're learning. We've made mistakes. Every single one of us has made mistakes. There's not one of us that hasn't. Because remember, even casting attention on thoughts is a mistake, right? And we're all innocent, even though these things occur. I know Sharon says her son is now homeless and on drugs in Florida. Yeah, well, we have people homeless and on drugs here in Colorado, and we often wonder why they don't go to Florida, because it gets awful cold here at night in the wintertime. I don't know how they survive. It gets awful cold here at night in the wintertime, and they're out there on the streets. I don't know how they do it. I really don't. But nobody's guilty. And we need to see this. Because if we continue to think that they're guilty, we are covering up our own true nature, and we are taking part in the creation of those thoughts like steal, sell your body, take those drugs, kill him. Even though we may not be feeling like we are sharing that responsibility, we are. We're all in this together. Now, the beautiful thing about this, all right, the beautiful thing about this, even though it is sad, I mean, it's sad that these people suffer. It's sad what Sharon's son is going through right now. It's sad what my friend went through and I think maybe is starting to go through again from what I hear. I don't think she's gotten completely healed. It's sad. But there's something beautiful there, too. The beauty is that our real thoughts are always there for each and every one of us. Underneath the experience that we are choosing, our real thoughts are always there. And in a way, none of us are ever far from them. It may seem like we're far from them. It may seem like we're really, really, really far from anything that sounds like peace or love or joy or openness. But the truth is they're right here all the time. And all we have to do is learn what to believe and what not to believe. All we have to do is learn that when that thought comes into my mind that that prostitute is a scumbag, that's not a real thought. How do I know that's not a real thought? Well, how do I feel if I choose to believe it? Do I feel genuinely peace, love, happiness, joy, openness? Then it's not a real thought. Anything that creates an artificial experience for me, meaning it covers up my true nature, is an artificial thought. And I don't want it. What's our, now I actually, I have to confess something to you guys before I do this. I have a confession. Remember, I'm not guilty, okay? As I'm going through the workbook, I typically, you know, probably 75% of the time, I actually change the workbook lesson a little bit. Because the way they're written, they're not a direct hit for me anymore. They were the first time I went through the workbook, but now, you know, they're really not. So if I really want the workbook to work on me this time at where I am now, I have to change it a little bit. So when I read this to you, I don't remember what was really in the workbook lesson today. You probably do. This is very, very, very close, but I changed it a little bit to fit me a little bit. Okay. I could go grab the course, I guess, and see what the actual lesson is. But here's my workbook lesson for the day. Are you ready? I will to be in light. Abide in light. Darkness is not my will. That's my version. You can tell it's only changed a little. I will to be in light. Abide in light. Darkness is not my will. So, can I honor that? My will. And think about the prostitute as a scumbag, too. I can't. How can I live in light, abide in light, and have that kind of a thought about that lady on the street? I can't. I can't honor myself and judge anyone, no matter what they do. If I judge anyone for anything, I literally betray myself. I will to be in light, abide in light. Darkness is not my will. I cannot serve two masters. Which one do I choose? It's as simple as that. So, going back to this first paragraph, we're not making it very far. If we're trying to rush through the book, we're failing. You cannot serve two masters means that you cannot believe illusory thoughts are true and know true thoughts as true also. True thoughts are always true, and illusory thoughts are not true. But illusory thoughts may be chosen as experience over thoughts that are true. So if I want to judge the prostitute, I can. And I'll have those experiences that are not my true nature as I judge. But if I want my true nature, I can't judge her, right? I have to decide what I want. Going on to the next paragraph, finally. If a false experience is your choice, a false experience is what you are given. Right? So like I said, I can judge her if I want to. I really can. I can judge her as harshly as I want to. I'm completely free to do so. But I'm going to feel every bit of my own judgment. That's the false experience I give myself. If a false experience is your choice, a false experience is what you are given. But the carnival ride of falsity must end when you are ready to turn into the light. The carnival ride of falsity must end when you are ready to turn into the light, because I cannot serve masters. I cannot judge that prostitute or that murderer or that president and turn into the light too. Which one do I want? I will to be in light, abide in light. Darkness is not my will. Therefore, I choose to let go of judgment and not be tempted by a single solitary appearance. Now, I'll tell you my personal experience, because I know sometimes people get very confused by this type of teaching, because some horrible things happen out there. Right? You know, like the question I got the other day about the girl who was sold as a sex slave when she was an infant. You know, that's a horrible thing. And I'm not one of these bliss ninnies that just, you know, oh, that's not real. I mean, because ultimately it's not, but hell, it's experienced as real. So, you know, I'm not a bliss ninny. So what is my response, Regina Dawn Akers we're talking about? What is Regina Dawn Akers' response to horrible things, evil? When I come across something that really strikes me as horrible, like I think I talked about this the other night at the end of the Seven Steps, the most recent one was the girl who was kidnapped in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, taken to a drug house where she was gang raped, pistol whipped, and finally shot, murdered. And then they took her body and they fed it to alligators. This girl was 17 years old. So how do I respond? How does I, Regina Dawn Akers, respond to that? I feel sadness. But I don't feel any judgment. I don't judge the boys or men who did it. It's sadness for the entire situation. Just sadness for the situation. No judgment of anyone. And then I remember, what is it, chapter 5 in the most direct means to eternal bliss? Choice A and choice B. Which one do I want? For those of you who don't know this, let me read a little bit to you. Heck, who cares if we finish this chapter? It's not important. Choice A, all right? Choice A is to choose to end the ego by dropping all unnecessary activities to create the maximum amount of time every day to practice the most direct and rapid means to eternal bliss. The most direct and rapid means to eternal bliss is the awareness watching awareness method. Choice A is infinite eternal awareness love bliss with no sorrow and no suffering. Choice A is eternal life. Choice A is to live as your true self forever. Choice A is absolutely perfect joy. Let's look at choice B. Choice B is being identified with a body subject to suffering, disease, death, violence, anger, fear, etc. Choice B is to allow an imposter called the ego to pretend to be yourself and to control you. Choice B is to allow an imposter, the ego, that has created all the wars, diseases, death, suffering, and evil that every human has ever experienced, to continue. Choice B is to have a temporary and therefore futile life that leads only to death. Which do I want, choice A or choice B? That's my response when I see evil. We'll call it evil. you know, what else would you call it? Kidnapping a young 17-year-old girl and gang raping her and pistol whipping her and shooting her and then feeding her body to alligators. What else would you call it? Selling your own baby, you know, into sex slavery, maybe because you need money to buy drugs or something, you know? It's not pretty stuff. And there's worse. And there's worse. That's not even the worst. My God, that's not even the worst. Too bad. I wish it was, but it gets worse in this present world that we live in. You know? So I can't feel happy about it. I feel sad, but I don't feel judgment. Not, you know, like he's evil. Not that. Just sad that this way of being exists in our world. And then I make choice A. I accept the atonement for myself. I practice awareness, watching awareness. I focus on today's workbook lesson. I make choice A to the best of my ability. What else am I going to do? I'm either, as Peace Pilgrim would say, a part of the problem or a part of the solution. There's not a neutral seat in this house. Hold on. Danielle wants to know where the heck I am. I'm going to say, why aren't you listening to my teaching? I'm teaching, Danielle. Here, teaching now. She probably wants to go walk the doggies, which we will do after I teach. All right. Teaching now, Danielle. So if a false experience is your choice, a false experience is what you are given. And let's remember what that false experience includes. That false experience includes all the wars, diseases, death, suffering, and evil that every human has ever experienced. At best, a futile life that leads only to death. Choice B. So as NTI says, if a false experience is your choice, if you want choice B, a false experience is what you are given. But the carnival ride of falsity must end when you are ready to turn into the light. You can't choose choice B and choice A. You have to pick one or the other. You cannot serve two masters. What do you want? NTI continues, I'm waiting for you to make the decision I know you will make. I am waiting for you to make the decision I know you will make. I am waiting for your signal, which is the empty shell. When you have given the signal to me, I will know you are ready for the light. You will not have to ask twice. The moment the signal is given, the light shall be given also. Oh, I see the question from Suhail. How is choice A different from escapism? Well, you know, I is he still here? No, he's left. But let me go ahead and answer that anyway. You guys, oh no, he is here. I see him. Okay, or her. Okay. Let me go ahead and answer that to the best that I can. I don't know what your spiritual thinking is or what spiritual teaching you've gone through. And so I don't know, you know, like in a minute how fully I can answer the question for you. But here's my answer. It's not escapism because it's awakening you to the truth. Escapism is a type of denial, right? Escapism is burying your head in the sand, trying to avoid something that you think is real. Choice A is not escapism because it's taking you to reality. It's awakening. Again, this truth that we're talking about is everyone's truth. Even, you know, if we could pick out what appears to be the most evil character on the planet now, just the sickest, you know, guy out there. Assuming it's a guy. The truth is true for him too. It's the truth of everyone. And by awakening to the truth, you help to heal the entire world. And this is what all of the great masters have done. Again, I don't know where you're from or what your masters are in your culture, but you know, Jesus, if you're from our culture, Jesus, Buddha, Ramana Maharshi, Rumi, right? Who else? Vasishtha. Right? I mean, there's just been tons of masters that have awakened to this truth, tons and tons of them. And they all recommend awakening to the truth. So it's not escapism. I hope that answered your question. All right, let's go back to this paragraph I just read. So Holy Spirit says, I am waiting for you to make the decision I know you will make. I am waiting for your signal, which is the empty shell. That, of course, means letting go of our own thinking. You know, and this is where a lot of people have a lot of trouble, you know, because there are certain thoughts that we think are righteous thoughts. We may see that some of our thinking is not helpful. You know, maybe I have the realization that to look in the mirror every day and say, you're ugly is not helpful, right? And maybe I begin to practice letting go of saying that to myself every time I look in the mirror. But I might think I'm completely righteous when I go off on, you know, how could Donald Trump and his administration let us bring coal back in? You know, coal pollutes the world and blah, 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 you know. And because I think I'm righteous in my thinking of certain thoughts, I don't let them go. I don't become the empty shell. And remember, you can't serve two masters. If I'm judging Donald Trump, you know, it's funny how many people, even on the spiritual path, would sit here and shake their heads yes while I'm saying we can't judge the prostitute. Yes, I agree, we can't judge the prostitute. But then the second I mentioned Donald Trump, well, wait a minute. You know, he's blah, 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 blah. No, he's no different. He's no different. I can't judge the prostitute and I can't judge Donald Trump. And I don't care what he does. I don't care what he does. If I want truth, if I want awakening, I can't choose to judge him. I can't serve two masters. I have to let Donald Trump be Donald Trump. And by the way, his thoughts that are leading him to do everything he's doing are no different than the thoughts steal or the thoughts sell your body. Those thoughts came from us. So it's kind of silly to blame him for something we are all a part of making anyway. He's just, I mean, we all know he's like a kid, right? He's just a kid that doesn't know better. He's just believing the thoughts that come into his mind. He doesn't know any better. You know? It's me that I have to watch. Me, I have to decide between choice A and choice B. Which one do I want? And then I commit to that. And when I make a mistake, because, you know, we do, then I remind myself and I go back to choice A. As soon as I can catch myself, I go back. Now listen to this next paragraph. Everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial. Yet that which is not beneficial cannot hurt because it cannot change the truth. So here we have NTI saying, you know what? Murder is not beneficial. Rape is not beneficial. Sex slavery is not beneficial. Maybe even destroying the environment is not beneficial, but it is permissible. You hear that? It is permissible. Anything is permissible. And we have to accept that if we're going to let go of judgment. If there's anything that we say is not permissible, we're going to slip into judging it. It's not all beneficial. That's true. It causes suffering, right? but it is permissible. And if we're going to make choice A, we have to allow it to be permissible. And the truth is, most of what we judge, we couldn't change anyway. I mean, can you change Donald Trump? Can you change some lady who's decided to, some girl who's decided to become a prostitute? Can you change the people who have decided to be sex traffickers? Do you personally, you know, as Kathy or Hal or Carla or Zach or Hazel, or, you know, do you have the ability to make, to change that right now? No. You don't. Not a thing you can do about it. So why waste your time judging it, which actually is adding to it? That is actually creating the script, that's making the thoughts, that's going into those minds that are blindly being believed because they don't know any better. Why not learn to let go of judgment no matter what happens? That's how you're a part of the answer. That's the 999. Doesn't mean you have to feel happy about it. I feel sad when I hear some of these stories. I'm sad, but I don't judge any of the characters. Everything is permissible, but do you still seek that which is untrue? If your answer is no, then why do you still go after it by partaking of illusory thoughts? That which you think is that which you experience. If you have tired of the experience that is untrue, stop feasting on those thoughts. Let them pass by without tasting them. Doesn't mean they won't show up in your mind, but let them pass by without tasting them. In this way, you become an empty shell, free of the experience you no longer want. And guess what? I have two sentences to read, and then we are done with this. We did make it through. So here's our last two sentences. Keep what you truly want in your mind. Let true desire be your guide. Keep what you truly want. So the question becomes, what do I want? I'll end with this, my version of today's workbook lesson. I will to be in light. Abide in light. Darkness is not my will. Sounds like choice A to me. Bye, y'all.